This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Mask of Guilt, Mask of Illumination, Book 1 is out. We all wear masks, some of us to hide our guilt. Lady Funari, lost in the malaise of depression, finds purpose with a group of all-women thieves, the Crack Gems. Intrigue, romance, betrayal, and adventure swirls around her in this epic fantasy tale. Today, I'm joined by Alexander Christian. He is the fantasy author of The Hand of the Dragons, Rook. How are you doing today, Alexander?
I am doing fine. How are you, sir?
Doing just good. It's Saturday. I seem to be over my cold. I was really sick yesterday.
Gotcha.
I slept like an extra 3 hours.
But isn't that a wonderful feeling?
Only because I was like feverish and not feeling well. So I guess it was better than feeling, you know, blug.
Yeah.
Instead slept. But yeah.
I have a wife and three girls, two of which are teenagers. So whenever I get more than 6 hours of sleep, I consider it a birthday present.
I just tend not to get more than 6.5 hours of sleep. It's like around 6 hours of sleep, I'll just wake up. It doesn't matter. Like even when I try to sleep in. And yeah. I have no reason. I'm like single. So I can just sleep whenever I want. You know, and I work from home, so really, like, I set my own hours. There's no excuse for me why I can't sleep in, but I can't. My body's like, no, it's time to get up.
You've done enough.
You got 6.5 hours of sleep. That's good enough. You're good to go.
Ooh, let me mute that so that doesn't happen again.
That's all right. All right. I'd like to start these off with a fun question or two, Alexander. So, are you a cat person or a dog person?
Absolutely a cat person. I have 6 cats in my house.
Jesus.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I hope you have a big house.
that we do. So right. I'm out in northern Maryland on the border of West Virginia, where land is fairly cheap, so you can get a whole lot of house for a little bit of money.
Nice. Yeah. My parents had I grew up on almost an acre in the middle of everything being turned from farmland into suburbs back in the 80s. So, when we moved in, there was a big empty field behind our house, and there was woods across the street and a swamp, and, the property across the street was where my friend lived, and, they had, 5-6 acres of just undeveloped land, and we would ride dirt bikes on when we were in, elementary school.
And you turned out to be a fantasy author. Who could have guessed?
Yeah. Now it's all, you know, houses.
Yeah. But a paved paradise to put up a parking lot.
Yeah, it's so weird. There's stuff out where there's a Walmart right next to my junior high now.
Yeah.
And there's a Target across the street from the library. There was a library right up the road. We were out in the middle of nowhere, but they had built a library out there, and it was literally 2 blocks up the street from me when I was growing up. So,
you gotta feed those imaginations, idle hands of the devil's workshop.
Yeah, I was just, you know, Chris kind of just put the, I don't know when they must have put it up in the 70s, but, you know, there it was. But now there's a whole bunch of stuff. We used to have to go all the way, we used to have to drive an hour to get to anything. And now it's just right there.
Yeah, right around the corner. You know, there's a library in my neighborhood, and I've been there 3 times, and each time was a school field trip.
Yeah, I haven't been to a public library. Last time I was in a public library was in the Great Recession when I was unemployed. And I went to the library because I was I'm going to use this time to read and research stuff. And then I went once and then I never went again.
I went in and I guess I got caught on the internet. I was That's when the show that made Olivia Munn a star. What is the name of it?
That was at on G4, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Attack of the Show. Yeah, Attack of the Show. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. that's what ate up all my time.
Yeah, fair enough. So, speaking of writing and stuff, how long have you wanted to be an author, Alexander?
Since the 5th week of 6th grade.
That's impressive. You have it narrowed down to that.
I know exactly the moment. So my father was a professional kickboxer, and the only thing that I was good at was hurting people. I was very good at hurting people. I just had a natural instinct. I could read kinetics. I could tell by how you were standing or you twisted your shoulders or leaned your head what you were going to do. And I didn't like to compete. You know, I'm a book nerd. But I am junior, and he was a professional kickboxer, so I did my part to uphold the name. But in sixth grade, we had an assignment to write a brochure for a business, and I wrote a brochure for a spa. And in the last 5 minutes of class, the teacher gives us 5 minutes to get our books and stuff together to go to the next class, and she read my paper to the class. And not only was she impressed, but my peers were impressed, and it was the only thing I found I was good at that I was proud to be good at. And that was the moment that changed everything.
All right. Fair enough. That's awesome. Like, I couldn't narrow it down to like a specific thing, just a sort of general, I wanted to write that sort of grew in over the course of, I think, the seventh grade.
That seems to be about the time.
Yeah. Like, cause I was reading a lot of fantasy, right? I started getting into Tolkien, in the sixth grade, and that kind of was the gateway drug into like Eddings and Brooks and McCaffrey and all that. And then I just kind of wanted to start writing stories, and I started reading like Forgotten Realms books and like Dragonlance books, and a lot of them were pretty bad, and I was like, man, I could write this bad. Why can't I do this? I'm not joking. That was my, like, man, I could probably write something this bad. And they're getting paid to do it. Why not me?
Even through teenage eyes, you could spot the poor.
Some of those Dragonlance books were awful. Not like the Wise and Hickman ones. Like the ones that kind of started it all. Those are good. But like a lot of the spinoff stuff were bad.
Yeah, I found the same thing with the Star Wars universe. Like, I don't know how you go about getting a license to write a Star Wars book, but yowza.
Yeah. I mean, I started with the Timothy Zahn, like, you know, the Timothy Zahn, like, you know, Thrawn trilogy, right?
Right.
You know, that stuff was amazing. And then it just, and the Kevin J. Anderson stuff wasn't bad, but there was some other really terrible stuff out there that kind of drove me away from it. And I've heard really bad things about the current stuff.
It doesn't even cross my radar at this point. What got me was, The Legend of Dritz, when he went on this journey to get to Silvery Moon, because he found out that even as a dark elf, they would allow him to get there, you know, to allow him to live there. And he makes this harrowing journey across 300 pages, and he get there, and they've elected a new leader, and Drow are no longer accepted. And he just cried. And I mean, I've seen him fight demons and dragons and giants, and it just broke his heart that they told him no. And I found myself crying, but it was the realization of this is not a person. There's not even an image. These are just words on a page, and it's hit me like this. And that's when I started. That's when my fantasy snobbery began. Like at the end of the book, if I don't feel something, then I just toss it and very quickly dump all that information.
Fair enough. Yeah, I definitely read books like that where they don't leave an impression, and you're just like, all right, well, that was something.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about your own book, By the Hand of the Dragon, Rook.
Yes.
So this is about a child that learns he's not really a child, but some sort of biological weapon that was kind of engineered. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, so, tell us about this kid.
What the thing is there is a doomsday device that has been hidden, and the dragons who were in charge of protecting it have slowly died off, and they're down to one. And the Dragon Council would like to just sink the entire continent to keep this thing safe. And the last dragon is like, I will build an army. This army will be able to protect this even in my absence. So her intention was to collect all the best warriors from the land, and they were going to pour the best of themselves into this crystal and give birth to this champion. And what they got instead was 300. So So, this shattered into these 300 individual beings. So instead of having this one great unified champion, they now have this army of child soldiers. And these are warriors and soldiers, and they have no idea how to raise them and so on and so forth. But the kid who is obviously the forefront, the intended, once he comes to understand what his purpose is and why he was created, it kind of breaks him. Like, he's this carefree, happy-go-lucky child, and then he finds out that the fate of the world rests on his shoulders, and he becomes obsessive in overcoming his insecurities. So to not feel like he isn't enough or isn't good enough or isn't doing enough, the pendulum swings too far the other way, and he becomes obsessed with combat and magic and challenging himself and pushing himself and basically becoming a dragon. And in his mind, that means losing all his humanity.
Right, right. It sounds like an interesting story. So, it's got to be tough finding out you're a weapon. So where'd you get the idea for this story?
December 2000, I walked out of Lord of the Rings absolutely frustrated. I went home and I wrote an entire screenplay out of spite. And that was kind of the birth of this. It had been so long since I read the books and had been refreshed on the story. I had forgotten how dated it was. But, to my 19-year-old brain or whatever I was at the time, the concept that something as powerful as magic could remain in the hands of a few just rubbed me the wrong way. It's just like technology. If it exists, there's going to be a black market for it. It's going to get spread everywhere. Eventually, it's going to be everywhere. So I wanted to create a world where magic in that world is as widespread as technology is in our world. So in the world of By the Hand of Dragons, magic is as prevalent as cell phones. It's everywhere. And I don't know. That just seemed more realistic to me. And then the question becomes, how much does everything change when, instead of gangsters having guns, gangsters are throwing fireballs? You know what I mean? Because that is the nature of human beings. And then I wanted to look at the perception of a character who doesn't have to level up to defeat the next challenge, but his challenge is being born powerful and learning when to solve the problem without violence. So that that was the genesis of all of this.
Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, I get that. I write books where magic tends to not be something that you can't that anyone could learn. Type of deal is more. You know how I think. I mean, Tolkien comes from the more how magic was viewed in ancient times, and more of how like it existed to our ancestors, where it was kind of this thing of wonder and mysticism, and they didn't ever really understand it. And you had this. It's the division of labor, right, that we have today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it lets you. We're at a point where we can, we have the leisure time to study things, where for most of human history, if you weren't spending every hour of daylight earning your sustenance, you weren't lasting long. There were very privileged people that didn't have to do that. But for 99% of humans, they had to go work their field, go mine, go do whatever it took to, get their coin or their food or whatever. And so
if we had this conversation before I published the book, I would completely rework half of the book based on what you just said. It hadn't occurred to me that it was not this secretive thing that was kept in the hands of the few, but nobody even had time. It's like, yeah, I would read, but I need food. So, so I'm going to farm for the next 10 hours.
And I won't deny that. They're definitely, if you look into like the mystery religions that came out of like Egypt and Mesopotamia and the Greeks, and there definitely was a whole bent of keeping knowledge secret and out of the hands of the plebs, right, as it were. There definitely is that bent to humans. But it's also fun writing worlds where everyone can do magic, or everyone gets magic, or everyone's born with magic, and then incorporating the magic into the world and how it functions.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you ever read the Codex Alera?
Oh, I love Jim Butcher, and I hated the first book of that, and I never got past it.
And I will tell you this: the first book is hot garbage. the biggest problem with the first book is he starts all these threats, he doesn't finish anything, he doesn't complete anything, you never feel fulfilled. But he spends the rest of the series tying off those ends, and it is magnificent. But for people who've never read the series, everybody is born with the ability to do magic, and this one kid isn't. So he has to figure out all of the things that are common to us, like, you know, stairs and ladders and just engineering, because he doesn't, you know, he can't fly and he can't create a fire to cook his food. So he has to figure out flint and wood. But that that disadvantage makes him the only person who can think. You know what I mean? He's the only person who has taken the time to find solutions to problems. And it I thought it was a brilliant bent to that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, necessity is the mother of all invention.
Yeah. So, like, how much does it change your world? If we could fly, like, just that one thing, if we could fly, what would that do to war, politics, religion, architecture? You know what I mean? It would completely alter the world that we know.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah, that's definitely a point. Yeah, I mean, I just, I felt his world building was really deficient. And so it irked me that the world felt like really small and tiny. And like, it just, I don't know, it didn't have what I wanted out of a fantasy book, which is really good world building.
Yeah. And I'll give you that. And what every book, he'll pull on a thread that he started in the first one. And then it kind of opens up and you get this whole world. So like when he mentions the, you know, the Marat, the kind of Native Americans, he gets sucked into their world and you really get to explore it. And, but yeah, that first book, I only read the series because a friend of mine suggested it. And then he raved about it. And then he physically brought me the books. And that is the only reason I got through that series, because that first book was a chore.
Yeah. Maybe I should give it another shot if I ever find the time, but
yeah, just read the cliff notes on the first book and then.
Well, yeah, like I just need to get refreshed on the first book.
Yeah,
because I don't remember much other than I came out of that book not satisfied.
Yeah,
and being vastly disappointed after being a really big fan of the Dresden Files.
Oh yeah, I am not as big a fan of the Dresden Files, which is ironic. It's the Harry is kind of okay being where he is. You know, he doesn't have that ambitious hunger to be a more powerful wizard, to get to the next level. He just wants to be a dude doing a job.
Well, that kind of is changed by the later half of the books.
Oh, okay. Good.
He's, necessity has driven him to have to.
Yeah. The last book I read, he was riding a T-Rex down the streets in Chicago. And
Deadbeat.
Deadbeat, yeah. Okay. It's like, this is pretty freaking awesome.
It is. Well, I mean, there's some awesome stuff. I mean, he drives a motorcycle across Lake Chicago with riding at the front of the Wild Hunt, being led by Santa Claus, of all things.
Wow. Okay, I might have to go back. It looks like we got to give Butcher another shot.
Yeah. There's book 12 is called Changes, and yes, that is a very aptly named book. Everything changes after that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it becomes a whole kind of different series, where he's definitely, it's like Butcher's building for stuff, and he's more building towards his end game now, opposed to like sort of the case of the week stuff we had, where he's kind of laying all the world building in all those early books. Now he's kind of bringing it all together towards his end game.
Grand finale. Yeah, he's had that plan in his head for like 25 years now.
Yeah, he's always said it'd be like, he always thought of it kind of as like a 20 book series with like a 3 book trilogy, post-apocalyptic trilogy or something like that.
Yeah.
To cap it off. So he's up to book like 16 or 17. He had to split the last book in half.
Oh, would that be?
Yeah, but he published them only like 3 months apart. unlike other authors that had to split a book apart, then took 5 years to get out that second book?
Yeah, that is actually my conundrum with book two. When I wrote book one, I was in the Army, and I was stationed on the DMZ in South Korea.
Yeah.
And then a blizzard came through, and we got trapped up there. So I wrote book one, turned out to be 555 pages. Book two turned out to be 402 pages. Because when you're stuck on a mountain in the snow and all you have is tablets, you just keep writing. So I've been trying to figure out how to break a book that big into three pieces. And the first thing I did was just chopped it into thirds, and the story didn't work. So now I've got to move pieces from book three into book one to make it work. And then that changes. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, I do understand that. I was with my first epic fantasy series, I thought about chopping it up, but it's like it didn't feel like I actually my first book got chopped in half because I wrote it out and realized how long it was. And I realized I had a point in the story that was a good end point for a book. Like it kind of everything felt like it built towards that this far. And it kind of like the next half really was its own separate story anyways. So
right.
It was an easy cut. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. My current series, I thought I wasn't sure if I was going to have really long epic fantasy books or have more shorter ones. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I want my shorter ones. But like my outline for book one became books one through four.
That was going to be a fat book.
Yeah, considering each one of them are 90 to 100,000 words.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Wowzers. That's a lot of reading.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a short fantasy novel.
It's short, you say? Okay.
Yeah, you gotta
figure out how to ride a tricycle.
I mean, I read like epic. I read those big doorstopper fantasy books that are, 200,000. 250,000, or Bran Sanderson's last book was like 320,000 words.
Yeah, so. Good gravy. That just intimidates me. I look at a book that big, and I'm just like, "This is the rest of my year. This is this is what I'm going to be doing the rest of my year."
Or it's a weekend for me.
Good. I salute you, sir.
I used to read like Wheel of Time books when they come out, and I'd read them in one sitting. It would be like 12 hours of just reading. Things are like 200,000 words.
Yeah. My sister, my eldest sister, she's 6 years my elder. She called out of work because she read The Order of the Phoenix book one in one sitting. She was just like, I gotta finish
this. I did. I read Order of the Phoenix. I read The Half-Blood Prince. I wish I hadn't read The Half-Blood Prince in one sitting because I got it at the midnight release. And then I read it all night long, and then I couldn't sleep after reading what happened at the end of that book. Like, my brain wouldn't shut down.
Right.
And
yeah.
I had to call out work because I didn't get any sleep. I worked evening, so it wasn't a bit – like, I thought I would be fine. Like, I could sleep all day, but I couldn't. So I had to call out work because I didn't get any sleep.
Yeah.
And so when the seventh book came out, I made myself stop and go to bed and then finish it when I woke up the next day so I didn't have this problem. But right. Then I read that book and like I got to the end of it and it didn't linger in my mind. Like the story was over. I liked it, right. But the story was done. There was nothing really for me to puzzle about or think about or wonder about. So I could have read that all night and then just went to bed without a problem.
if I had but known. So here's my question for you. Because of that, I try not to have a chapter longer than 10 pages. I like to give a reader a nice stopping point, a place where you can like put this thing down and go to bed or finally see what that kid is crying about. do you regulate your own writing that way?
I try to not have too long chapters. Like if I know that the chapter seems a little too long, I'll see if I can break it in half or something. Gotcha. But I also like to end my chapters on mini cliffhangers.
Yeah, so. I hate that. You horrible, horrible person.
I'll end a book on a cliffhanger.
Nightmare fuel. I mean, I get it, but I just it's one of those things where it's like, so they asked Shakespeare said there's only two kinds of stories. There's comedies and there's tragedies. And they said, what is the difference? And he said, comedy is when an old man falls in a hole. Tragedy is when you fall in a hole. So
yeah.
As the author, I get the whole cliffhanger thing, but as a reader, I'm like, oh, you son of a...
Well, they don't. I don't know. I, as a reader, I don't bother me either. Like I read, I read like The Wheel of Time. I started when there's only four books out, or then the fifth one I think just came out not long after I started. And I mean, it took almost 2 decades before that series was complete for me. So I don't know. And all those books ended like not kind of on cliffhangers where I kind of just like there's more coming and I need more. And I'd have to spend 2 years like obsessing on message boards because I was a teenager and I had that sort of free time. So I don't know. They don't bother me. And I publish books fast. I'm not going to leave my reader hanging for 2 years. They're going to be hanging for like a month. So
really, you're not. Oh, yeah, you are putting them out there thick. Yeah, yeah, you are.
And I won't do cliffhangers in the first couple books, really. I'll save the cliffhangers for like when you're invested in the series. So like you'll get to book 3 and that'll be a cliffhanger and book 4 will be a cliffhanger.
Right.
But I'm like, you're invested by this.
Yeah, you're hooked. Yeah. I don't know, irking me, I guess. Have you read the King Killer Chronicles, The Name of the Wind?
Does that terrible book?
Yes, that awful, awful, terrible book.
I didn't finish it. I got so frustrated halfway through, about 3/4 through that book. I just threw it away.
Was it the girl? Was it Dana?
I could see what this relationship was, and it was going to just aggravate me.
Right.
It's that they get together and they break apart. And I'm like, no, fuck no. Plus he was a Gary Stu. Yeah. He was such a big Gary Stu.
Yeah. Yeah. This is true. He was.
I also found the present storyline with the old dude having to deal with like the weird spider demon things far more interesting than reading about his past. And so that was the other problem.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like the framing story I found more interesting than the story.
than the base story.
Yeah. He's like this old dude who's like this running this bar or whatever. And they're like, oh, there's this. And I found that to be a very interesting story. Then it was just like, I'm a childhood prodigy that goes to magic school. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I'm sure I haven't read this before.
Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is he leaves questions in that book, but they're never prevalent. And I thought that was a very good technique. Like in the library, there's this stone door. And nobody remembers how to open it. Or in his room, he has a box with no lid and no locks. And he doesn't know how to open it. And on the message boards, people are doing all of this, detective work to try to figure out what it is. So I thought that was a great way to get engaged and give people something to think about after they put down the book. So far, nobody cares. Like I have seeded all of these mysteries and these dangling threads throughout my books, and nobody cares.
You gotta have a really huge fan base to get those sort of obsessive people. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm working towards it.
Yeah, I kind of do the same thing. But anyways, we are going really long. So, what are you working on next?
So the follow-up to Rook Scales is with the editor. It's in final touch and go production, and I wanted to have that out by June 1st. It's not going to happen, so I'm hoping for July 1st. And then other than that, I'm writing a self-contained story as a reader magnet, and the problem that I'm having is it's trying to turn into a full-fledged novel, and that's always bad.
Yeah. Well, if you want to tell our listeners where they can connect with you on the internet.
You can find me at By the Hand of Dragons almost anywhere. WordPress.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, By the Hand of Dragons, or Alexander Christian, that is AlexanderChriston. It'll try to correct you, but just ignore it. And, I am everywhere. I even have a MeWe page for whatever reason.
Facebook, but they don't sell your data.
But no one
uses it.
So yeah.
It's like, so, I'd like, come over here. We can get away from Facebook.
Yeah. But they no, but I'm trained.
Yeah. Anyways, well, it was really great talking with you, Alexander.
I had a place, I don't want to say I was going to curse. I've had a great time talking to you, sir.
Yeah. You have yourself a good one.
You too.
All right.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.